Gorgeous George and Ghost, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on!
From the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, this is MMA Junkie Radio.
We rollin'!
What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George checking in here. It is Sunday night. We're going to do this show for your Monday morning delivery. We got UFC 300 to talk about, of course, top to bottom. It was an outstanding card. Had a blast doing the watch along. Hopefully you all had a blast. If you were there in person, watched it with us, whatever. As long as you saw it, man, it was historical. I think the fighters came through for the UFC. I think the UFC did as good as they could, you know, getting this thing out there, right? But then the fighters, a lot of them performed, especially one in particular. I know you guys know which one I'm talking about. So we're going to unpack the whole card. And then, of course, PFL was also in town. PFL's kind of on a three-week run. So we've been trying to catch up with some of their names. And we're going to talk to Brendan Lochnane. He's a former champion for PFL. Last season didn't go too well for him, but he's back. He's doing it again. The regular season format, which of course requires a lot of weight cuts, a lot of fights. He's always a fun guy to chat with about all this stuff. We'll be right back to start the show. All right, guys. So last night was pretty heavy, right? Like, we were exhausted. I mean, we just wanted to almost end the watch along as they were doing the post fight with Pajeda, the whole translator thing. It was late where I'm at. Nothing against that guy. He did his job. But, dude, there was this big calm down, like this adrenaline dump after Max Holloway beat Justin Gaethje. Not just because he kind of dominated him for 25 minutes. Well, 24 minutes and 59 seconds. I think he was up three rounds going into the fifth. And so we're just expecting him to either pick his shots or cruise the finish line. And then he does that whole matador thing, right? Points to the middle and then like two bulls. I'm all over the place. Is he a matador? Is he a bull? He's a bull. He pointed to Justin Gaethje. He said, let's go. He didn't need to. That's for sure. He was on his way to a win. But he did, and he slugged it out. And then, dude, with 1 second left, he put this guy on the canvas, shut him out, and everyone went nuts. I still haven't forgotten it. And then now seeing social media with all the different angles, pretty damn cool.
Yeah, I can't stop yawning. I mean, last night was brutal, and I actually rewatched the card. And I'm right at the point where, right when we started the show, was when the Holloway fight was ending. So I got to kind of see that again. And dude, is like as crazy smart as he was, Max Holloway, and that game plan that he fought Justin Gaethje, he was just sticking to his game plan, perfect to a T, just swallowing leg kicks left and right. If somehow they weren't affecting him, those last 10 seconds could have, what if, right? Like, what if it would have gone the other way? How ridiculous would you have felt? But he was just ahead of the game, man. And all those strikes, you could just tell. And putting him away like that, I mean, what a decision, right? A $600,000 decision, really, when you think about it.
Yeah, and he made $300,000 for Justin Gaethje. Those two sucked up $900,000 of the $1.2 million in bonuses that Dana White agreed for the whole card. And one man took half of it. Now, look, I guess since we tiptoed into that topic, I'll say this. I thought Rakic and Prochazka was more of a fight of the night, and I'll tell you why. Because it went back and forth for the whole fight, whereas this one I thought was a little more one-sided. And, you know, was that last 10 seconds some of the most exciting MMA I've seen in my life? Yeah, of course. The KO was amazing. You know, the balls on Max Holloway to take a chance and slug it out with a heavy-handed guy like Justin Gaethje when he's up. I mean, I respect, right? Across the board. A fight of the night, I thought, was the other two. I would have given Max his 300 G's for sure. And then I don't know what I would have done between Pajeda, Harrison, Lopez. I think I would have just said, fuck it, all three of them get it or something. I don't know what I would have done, but or maybe just giving them 100 grand each. Mm-hmm. Dana White saying 20,000 were there, 16 million gate. Sounded like I said 60, and I'm sure the pay-per-views did well. The money was there, you know. But yeah, like, okay, it's done. And I will never forget that fight and that ending. And it definitely shook up featherweight and lightweight.
Yeah, dude. That, I mean, it's really crazy when you think about everything that went into the decision to have certain fights and how it played out. Like, overall, I think it was a home run for the UFC. And they had some things go their way. And what I mean by that is this fight, like, this kind of eliminate, I mean, it definitely eliminated Justin Gaethje out of the equation, right? And kind of left that door open for Dustin Poirier. That kind of worked out in their favor, I think. Pereira getting out of the fight unharmed, possibly being a guy that you could throw on the Brazil card. If you're crazy, we'll probably talk about that. So many things worked out in their favor. Kayla Harrison, her debut, being able to now probably put her in a very pivotal spot. Like, a lot of things worked out in the UFC's favor for this card.
And that's the brilliance of their talent and how deep their roster is. Really, the UFC just has to, like, function, right? And I think Dana said 550 employees worldwide, and I'm sure they're all pretty damn talented. But honestly, those fighters, you plug them and play them, and you got yourself a sport. You know, the UFC is a promotion, but it's basically the sport. I know that sounds awful to say when there's so many other quality organizations. I just feel like those organizations kind of feed into the UFC. Or they're an outlet once you're done with the UFC, or maybe a few, you know, filter through, like a Kayla Harrison. I think we always felt like after watching Kayla for the first couple seasons, you know, I think she did good at the UFC, but she wasn't willing to go down from 55. And all they had was 45. I thought she should have done that, to be honest. But then she goes on a free agent route tour, and they couldn't get things done, you know. So anyway, we'll go fight by fight. So Holloway versus Gaethje. We started there just because I think it's the most popping thing coming off the card. What do you do with Holloway? He had a nice call out of Topuria. And if Topuria is all about making money, how is him versus Gaethje or Holloway not bigger than him versus Volk at this point, right?
Say that one more time. How is him?
If Topuria is all about making money.
Right.
Because you know how they always, you know how everyone says, I'll fight Conor McGregor. They always throw it out there because it's a red panty night. At this point in time, what's the bigger fight? Topuria versus Volkanovski or Topuria versus Holloway?
I think Topuria and Holloway.
So do I. And I think if I'm the UFC, I say, look, he's the hot hand. So let's do Holloway versus Topuria. He says he's willing to go to Spain. Let's do it in Spain. And let's give Volkanovski a little more time off. We're going to force him to kind of sit and get better because he's coming off two vicious KOs back to back, right? So we don't really look like a bad guy because we tend to play the hot hand. He'll have to understand he gets winner, I guess, or we wait and see. You know, maybe Volk tells him, I want to fight. I don't know. But all I know is you have to protect your assets somehow. And Volk's still an asset. So that's what I would say. I'd say Volk, we're going to get you at the end of the year. We can't guarantee you'll fight the winner, but you'll have a big fight. We'll, you know, cause we got to see how that thing plays out and then run with it, you know, at that point. So now what'll happen is if the UFC is in a pickle, that's where all of a sudden they don't care about concussions and fighters' health. They're like, this guy's willing to run it back. Let's get him in there. And I kind of don't like that. And I sense that sometimes is the case, but I can't prove it. It just seems that way.
I like what you said about we need to protect our assets.
Yeah.
Because they didn't do that with Volk with the rematch. And they didn't do that with Jamal Hill. Like I've said this a lot between this and Spinning Backlick. They are a company that goes day to day. They live in the moment. And sometimes they're just, I don't know what their deal is. They make so much money. I don't know why they panic so much like that. But they're willing to kind of almost sacrifice a fighter like a pawn just to get something good at the moment. But they forget, like, is Alexander Volkanovski going to be the same now? Is Jamal Hill going to be the same now? I don't know. But one thing I will say about Max Holloway, to your point of him saying he'll go to Spain, I thought he kind of messed up there. He was on such a high from what he did. Look, I get it. I would throw Spain in there too, but I would say, you know what, guys? Like, look in the audience. BJ Penn is in that audience, and he's an absolute stud that gave everything he had for the UFC, but he never was able to fight for the UFC in Hawaii. And I don't want that to happen to me. Let's do this fight. We'll do it in Hawaii. If we can't get that done, then I'll go to Spain. But we got to get to Hawaii. And I'd get that entire arena screaming and yelling and just say, what else do I have to do? I just took out one of the best 155ers in the world. I knocked his ass out. I should be able to call some spots. I thought he should have done something like that, man.
Well, Dana was asked about that. I'm all about them going to Hawaii. And Dana says something about the infrastructure.
Enough with that, man.
I know. First, it was the weather. It does rain every day. It does rain every day. I get that part. But they have a 15,000-seat arena at the University of Hawaii, and then they got an 8,000-seat arena. So the media asked them, and they said, hey, look, Bellator's gone. And, of course, instead of just kind of telling us what's the real reason you can't go, he said he starts bagging on Bellator. And I get it. I can tell that he's no longer an ally of PFL or whatever. So now he's going to come at them. He started coming at them for their show on Friday and how they were buy one ticket and get two free and who knows what. But he was asked, okay, maybe you can't do a proper show, right? Which doesn't have to be a stadium show. I mean, like I said, they have a 15,000 seat arena. I'm pretty sure the one they're going to in Rio is about that seating. Mm-hmm. I'll check in a sec. But he says, they asked him, well, look, you know how some fight night places are smaller, but you go there just to fucking tick the box, right? And say, we did it.
Right.
Do that. And of course he pivots again and says, starts bagging on Bellator, and he says an Apex show has more people than Bellator, but he never really gives us the answer. I know it has something to do with the government and a high tax or something, right? But like the UFC's done so many times, they've paid out a lot of money to get certain things done. Imagine how much money they paid just to get into New York. Mm-hmm. I still feel like they just got to do it, deliver, and hopefully the state goes, holy shit, these cats brought a lot of money in.
Exactly.
We gotta revisit whatever stance we've had. These guys should be here yearly with their athletes who are Hawaiian, you know? So if it costs more the first time, whatever it is, okay. You know, like do it. Because, yeah, they missed the boat with Penn. Soon they're going to miss it with Holloway. You got to imagine he doesn't have that much time left. Maybe 3 good years left. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that they have their next superstar in the pipeline just yet. So, but
you gotta do it. You gotta bite the bullet. To me, it sounds like maybe something personal, something political. You just don't want to budge on. But fuck, just bend a little bit, and maybe, I don't know. Every time the UFC goes to a new city, you see that buzz. You see how big it can possibly be for the company, for the fighters. Maybe the next time they budge a little bit more. Hey, we want this to come back. We don't want to be one and done. I just, to me, it'd be a damn shame if we don't see BJ Penn and we don't see Max Holloway in there. That's just a damn shame.
Who's the bigger Hawaiian star ever, BJ Penn or Max Holloway?
You know what was crazy about BJ Penn was it didn't even matter the weight class to him, but Max he doesn't really have that over Max now, because Max has done that twice. gone up to 155 and won at 155. Oof, that's tough.
Now, BJ won an undisputed welterweight title over Matt Hughes, who was a moose at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Then he won the lightweight title, right? And even though he lost like 8 in a row or something like that at the end, we kind of focus on, well, at his prime, what was he like? So, yeah, he fought at different weight classes. He was pretty nutty. He's a pioneer. You know, I won't say he's their first athlete because they had, obviously, Ensign Inoue back in the day, even Cabbage Correa. I mean, he's up there, right? But he wasn't like the first guy, but he was up there. He's one of the first. Mm-hmm. So he'll always be beloved. I'm sure Max probably was moved by BJ Penn's career, and maybe that drew him to MMA. But now Max Holloway's got, he can match, his featherweight career can kind of match BJ's lightweight career. Lightweight, or the extra weight class, you know, he beat this guy for the BMF title. Penn beat Hughes for the undisputed title. But, you know, they both kind of had their gangster moments. That's a tough one, bro. I don't think there's a wrong answer. I think if someone says, Max, I might say, I feel you. You know, like the more of the recent bias, I guess. If someone wants to go technical and go, no. Two undisputed titles trumps a undisputed title and a BMF title, then I'd probably side with that one too. It's a really, really close one, though.
It is. And maybe just the fact that BJ was a little bit more of a pioneer, maybe that's what edges things out.
Mm.
I often said, though, you know, I feel like that particular spot is so iconic to just be that guy. I always felt like BJ Penn should have passed that song that he would walk out to the next guy. And Max Holloway carries that song, you know, like it just always seems like Hawaii has that one dude that just carries the torch. I would have liked to see that.
Yeah. And if you really want to, like, you're making me think here, if that actually took place, what'd be cool is if Max, because a lot of athletes go, I'm my own guy, you know, okay. But this one does have sentiment for the islands. What'd be cool is if he did pass it to him, and let's just say he only did it once, but then BJ Penn walked him out. Like, you know what I mean? That synergy would be really, really awesome.
The
cool thing is, if you ask Penn, he'd probably say Holloway, and if you ask Holloway, he'd probably say Penn. There's the respect between those guys.
I guess it kind of reminds me of when Apollo Creed gives his trunks to Rocky.
Yeah.
You know, Rocky doesn't really say, I'm the Italian stallion, leave me alone. Like, I think he embraced it and was like, wow, this is a major figure. I know it's a movie, but major figure in our sport. You know, and he's handing this down to me. He must think a lot of me. Something like that, you know.
What about Gaethje? So he lost the title shot. I guess he might have lost it anyway. Maybe the UFC just needed something for UFC 302 because it was announced that June 1st is UFC 302 in Newark, New Jersey. And it's headlined by Islam Makhachev and Dustin Poirier. Dana White did it at the post-fight press conference, even though he doesn't make fights on at post-fight press conferences. He made like 3, or at least he announced 3. And so I think it has to do with the schedule, obviously. Even if Gaethje won, he wouldn't have been ready to go. And it didn't look like Armin Sarukian won the crowd, even though he beat Chucky Olives via split decision. So it's Makhachev versus Poirier. But what do you do with Justin Gaethje now? It's funny to think Gaethje's the guy that beat Poirier to cement his title shot against Makhachev, and it didn't work out.
Man, I mean, this just timing is so much of a big thing of this whole process in the UFC, and boy, did it bite Justin Gaethje in the ass. I mean, he lost to a featherweight. He got KO'd by him. He took a ton of damage in the fight. Remember?
Eye pokes.
He took one in each eye, a broken nose, probably. It seemed like his leg was bothering him throughout the fight. This is a lot to come back from, and he's older, you know? Now everything he's got to do moving forward, you know, he's just... it's going to be tougher. It's a tougher road for him. I think it's a real big setback. Now, that being said, he probably made a shit ton of money. But money ain't everything, man. Not, like, I think I'd rather have my health and be able to do this longer. He did not have an answer for what Max Holloway was doing in that fight. And I think the broken nose had a lot to do with it too. You know, that seemed really difficult on him, but definitely a lot of time off. I would say a lot of time off.
Yeah. And the leg kicks, we thought they might factor in, but they did damage Holloway, but they didn't stop Holloway. And Holloway was just free to tee off, and Holloway's very accurate. He knew when to get in. He knew when to get out. He also got knocked down, you know, and he got wobbled a few times. But his chin's legendary as well. So can't say enough about that guy. Gaethje just ran into a beast, you know. And so now that beast has options at 45 and 55. No one's really anointed him as a title challenger just yet. But it's Poirier versus Makhachev, and then you got to believe if Makhachev wins, which I expect him to. I know it sounds awful to say without really giving you a breakdown, but I just see him pretty much stopping Poirier using that wrestling, and he'll probably want to fight in Abu Dhabi in October, so that's where he might fight Sarukian, or I suppose Holloway's name maybe gets thrown into the hat because he beat Gaethje. And he's popular. I don't know. I don't think Holloway would do good against Makhachev either. So
I actually kind of do think he would give him a little bit of problems. Just because this Holloway that we saw at 155 this time around looked like he gave a little bit more commitment to being a lightweight. Like he filled out well. Mm-hmm. I thought he fought the right fight. I think he could
have taken down and mauled.
You think so? Over and over?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think him and Poirier, they're upright fighters with great hands. Don't get me wrong. If Makhachev is dumb enough to stand with him, he gets knocked out by both. But he's not. He'll basically, you know, use the strikes to set up the takedowns, and then it's basically curtains at that point. Sarukian, on the other hand, is really tough on the ground. And so I expect that one to be a tougher fight for sure. But Sarukian might have his own problems. He socked someone on the way in. I looked at that thing about, I kid you not, 50 times, different angles. Well, there's really only two angles. What it looks like is that as he's going through the high five process or the, you know, just, you know, as he's walking out, he's, fans are reaching, you know, they want a high five or a fist bump or whatever. It did look, I saw the comments, and it did look like someone said someone held up an offensive sign. And so I looked at it a few times, and it did look like someone was holding something, and that's what he reacted to. The problem is he reacted as he's kind of touching like a kid or a fan or whoever that was doing it. So it almost looks like, hey, that pissed me off. I'm about to sock the fan that just touched me or someone in that vicinity. Mm-hmm. I wish there was more to that where I could see. Now, that said, that's probably still not the right place to do that. Dana White's already said we expect a lawsuit over this. But he was gushing over the success of the night that he didn't really want to get into it. But he could tell, you know, it's probably going to be a little trouble. I don't know what kind of trouble that might be for Sarukian, but, and I don't even know if that impacted this whole thing with Poirier and Makhachev. I just think the UFC needed something. They wanted to make an announcement, so there it is, and then they'll just deal with a contender at the end. The only thing I don't like is the winner of the BMF, Gaethje and Poirier, gets a shot at the champ. That didn't happen. The winner of Bilal Muhammad versus Gilbert Burns, last minute, they get a shot at title. That hasn't happened. The what's another one that just recently? Oh, the winner of Kamaru versus Hamza Shamayev, they get a shot. That didn't happen. It's like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's almost like stop saying it. I think just call it some sort of a title eliminator, I guess, but not like a number one contender, or don't promise a title shot, because it seems like it's happening more often than not that they just get someone gets skipped over.
To go back to Sarukian, I don't know if you noticed, but. So after he did that, right, after he steals on whoever that was, he starts walking and he goes about another 5 yards or so. And then he flinches at another guy. So I don't know if it was like a group that was out to try and provoke him or what, but either that or he was just in a bad fucking mood. I don't know. I don't know what his deal was, but I can see that, like what people are saying, like maybe somebody was provoking him with a sign or something. But it was two times. One time he actually went after someone, and then another time he kind of flinched at another fan. So they must have been trying to do something. He'd been getting booed all week too. Like, who knows?
Yeah. Well, imagine if that had somehow cost him. I'm trying to think of how it could have. I mean, I suppose a fan could press charges, but like you're literally not gonna stop him from fighting, you know, like but obviously a bad decision, sign or not.
Whatever. Well, you can get suspended by the commission, right?
Probably.
Yeah, so I mean this could be something, a problem for him.
Yeah, and possibly for the UFC, who knows? All right, well, we kind of unpacked Gaethje and Holloway. We know Poirier's fighting Makhachev. Another announcement, I'll just say it. On that same card is Costa versus Strickland. That's the co-main event, and they're going to go five rounds. That's cool. All right. And then, and by the way, I don't think I heard Dana White say as a title eliminator or title number one contender or nothing like that. It's just the co-main event, which still opens up who's DDP fighting, right? I mean, I suppose it's not. Because Strickland was the other guy. So I imagine it'll be Izzy and DDP fighting, which kind of makes sense, I guess. I don't like Adesanya walking into a title shot because he already got that that honor or whatever you want of getting the immediate title shot after an impressive title reign. And he came back and beat Alex Pereira. But then he got waxed by Strickland. So how many times are you going to cash that in? You know, like, oh, I'm a longtime champ. I should get next. Well, no, you kind of got it, won your title, and then you lost it right away again to Strickland, who, by the way, dominated you. Like, he left no doubt. I would have preferred Izzy get someone, but yet again, the UFC has this business, and they got to sell stuff, and so they got to squeeze Izzy in there, you know? And like I say, I'm not too big of a fan of that. Like, I really like the competition and merit side of things. But I'm starting to just accept it.
But it's okay every now and again. I don't have a problem with it every now and again, especially if you have a good explanation for it. It just can't become the norm. It's starting to become the norm.
Yeah, exactly. And I think at the end of the day, it could be that fans aren't like us. There might be a lot of, this is a new sport. There might be a lot of fans that don't even know what it's like to fight for a wild card spot in the NFL, you know, or fight for the wild card spot in baseball, or, you know what I mean? There's these certain fights throughout the season to get to certain places. And in the English Premier League, you know, the top four get the champions. I think it's going to be five next year. You know, so they kind of mean something, right? And then when all of a sudden, like if the English Premier League were to go, hey, Manchester United sells a lot of shirts, even though they're in seventh, let's just figure out how to put them in here and we'll tell Tottenham to beat it. You don't do that, you know, like you have to just live with it if you're United and if you're a fan, and you just go, fuck, like we either got to play in Europe or whatever. But those are the rules. But the UFC just flies by the seat of their pants.
Yeah, it's frustrating.
McGregor versus Chandler's official at UFC 303. Good for Chandler. He was a patient individual. This thing's going to cost him almost 2 years by the time they fight. I guess closer to 18 months of his career. But if he were to win, it'll be lucrative for him. I don't know that it'll lead to a title shot because, again, you got Sarukian and Holloway and, you know, everybody else that's barking, you know, down the tree of Makhachev. But it'll be big, and he really, really wanted it. So the payday must just be astronomical, I guess. I don't know. I mean, of course, but does that outweigh the possible 2-0 he could have gone? And would he rather be in Poirier shoes fighting Makhachev? I don't know. I guess we'd have to ask him one day.
Honestly, I think not. I think he'd rather be in these shoes. Something, I have to imagine they've taken care of him in some way. But this, Look, man, this is, you know how we were talking about Kayla Harrison, right? She's fighting twice. She's fighting the scale. Yeah. She's fighting her opponent. This is just the first fight. Now you got to get there, right? You got to hope Conor McGregor doesn't get in trouble. You got to hope nobody gets hurt. Get to that fight and cash that big payday, man. Really, really start to talk this one up a little bit.
Yeah. It's done, so I'm good with it. I think if McGregor wins, and by the way, it's at 170. If McGregor wins, and I don't believe Dana when he says Connor's the easiest guy to work with. I don't believe that. I just don't think he likes pissing off his superstar. But if he were to beat, well, I'm also curious, did they just agree on this fight or did they sign a new contract? You know, I don't know.
That's very important.
If he were to beat Chandler at 170, the UFC will find a way to make him fight the winner, Poirier versus Makhachev. So It's all big business. I don't think Dana White cares if the best in their weight class wear the title. I just think he cares about making money. And that's not necessarily a bad thing if you're a businessman. But like I say, if you really, really want to find out who the best are, this hierarchy thing, it's not working.
But it's going to work to their favor, because when you think about it, by that point, you would have already eliminated Justin Gaethje. You would have probably already eliminated Dustin Poirier. And then, if Makhachev beats Tsarukyan, then it's not as far-fetched as it would have been, like, say, right around now, right, where there are people that deserve that shot. That's exactly what they're going for. You know, that's what they want. But you got to sign him to a big deal, right? You don't want him to just Bret Hart and take off.
Yeah, exactly. And let's see how he looks. I mean, he might look like trash. He's going to be off a 3-year layoff or something like that himself. I think he fought in 2021, if I'm not mistaken. So by the time he fights, it'll be 3.5 years.
Is there any way, if you're Conor McGregor, what would make you sign a new deal? Because look, this has been done before in boxing. Floyd Mayweather, the best decision of his life was to go off on his own, start his own promotions, do his own thing. He cashed in a lot of money because of that decision. Conor McGregor, I'm not saying start Conor McGregor fighting championships, but you know, maybe you can do something similar to like what a Francis Ngannou did, just on an even higher level where you're taking home a big chunk of the money versus the UFC is. I don't know. What would you do? What would you want to stay with the UFC, or would you want to try and go out and do your own thing? Call out.
All I think Conor wants is the ability to box and make money. I don't think he cares too much about promoting. I think he gets his money from his whiskey and his lager and his business and whatever else. So I don't think he needs to even worry about promoting like Masvidal's doing or anything like that. But when he can fight in Saudi Arabia and they'll pay him $100 million, I think he wants to keep it all. Or at least 75 and give the UFC 25. But he wants to make that 75 and box. He doesn't want to turn down that kind of money. So it had to probably do something with that. If they didn't sign him long term, then it was because they gave him the permission to do that. So I don't think he cares about bare knuckle. I don't think he cares about PFL or you know, there's no more Bellator, I guess. So I don't think there was anything else. Just if me and Jake Paul can make $50 million each, or if Saudi Arabia is going to pay me this, I want to be able to do that. And if so, then yeah, I guess I'll sign this contract to be in the UFC.
But those fights are out there, right? Like, let's say a Jake Paul, that's not far-fetched. A Jorge Masvidal, the third fight with Nate Diaz. Like, he's got options outside of the UFC.
He does, but I think he really loves the UFC, for one, and I think he still feels like he can win in the UFC. What I'm pretty confident in is that even he believes that he can't beat Makhachev. He just can't beat Khabib and Makhachev. Khabib's gone, but Makhachev is Khabib 2.0, I guess, or whatever you want to call it. I'm not saying he's twice as good as Khabib. I think Khabib would have beaten Makhachev, but he just knows he can't get past that guy. And he's getting older, and you know, all these young, hungry lions are out there. But I think he thinks I want to be able to box, but I can still go out and on the UFC stage, I can still beat an older Nate Diaz or a Michael Chandler or whoever. Someone that's just not interested in wrestling and we're just going to throw down. I can take those guys.
Mm-hmm.
We'll do the co-main event and the main event when we come back. Right now, let's squeeze in Brendan Lochnane. He's got a fight coming up at PFL 3 2024. Two other regular season matchups or weeks of fights are in the books. Now they go to Chicago. They've done San Antonio, Vegas. They head to Chicago on Friday. Let's talk to Brendan Lochnane, who's going to be fighting Pedro Carvalho in the co-main event of the night. Junkie Nation, he's back. One of our favorites, Brendan Lochnane. He's got a big fight coming up in the windy city of Chicago. It's PFL 3 regular season. And his opponent is Pedro Carvalho. Exact date is 1 week from today, Friday, April 19th. What's going on, Brendan? How are you?
Hey, guys. Always better for seeing you fellas, that's for sure.
Thank you, sir. You guys are on ESPN and ESPN Plus. So a lot of eyeballs. But why aren't you the main event? It bugs me that someone who's a former champ, who's charismatic and throws down. I mean, you're ticking boxes left and right. What's the deal here? You're co-main, no disrespect. I mean, that's legit, but I just think you should be at the top of the heap. You're the guy that they parade around to all the radio stations and have him promote this fight card.
Wow, I never even thought of it like that, to be honest. But now you say it. Yeah, I'm with you. Why am I not main event? I'm only joking. It is what it is. The main event is a cool fight, to be fair. Ulmatov and Khorashov, that is a great fight. Me and Pedro's also a great fight, but the card is really stacked. I'm glad they brought these Bellator guys over, freshen it up a bit. For a minute there, it was me, Bubba, and Movlid doing the rounds for about 3 years.
Yeah, that's true. Well, no, yeah, those guys are definitely studs. The Khorashov's a former champ. Ulmatov's undefeated. I get it. But I don't know. I feel like a lot of times I'll have friends who are casual fans. Goz and I are hardcores. We cover the sport. We're also fans. We know a lot of hardcores that know all you guys and gals, right? But every once in a while, some casuals will text me, hey, I'm on ESPN. This is cool, right? But that connectivity is missing sometimes when the pre-fight package has the translator or when post-fight Sean O'Connell's talking and he has to go through two or three different people to get these responses, you know? So I think you're a gem, bro, like for the promotion, your fighting style, you've worn gold and you have great smack. That's why I'm saying it, I guess.
Thank you. Appreciate the compliments. I do try my best. You know, I try to do every interview that's physically possible. I try to talk. I try to get fights, you know, hyped up. And I also try and be exciting in the ring. So, like, yeah, thanks for your compliments. I'm doing something right.
Brendan, I know last season was a bizarre ending. You get a first-round KO, but then a first-round KO does you in because of the point system. There's others that have backed in with a win and a draw, or sorry, a win and a loss. Like, this was really, really baffling to me. But was there any positives that came out of that negative?
Well, I actually got a second-round TKO, and that was the problem if it would have been the first round. Okay. Yeah, that's what I'm like, you know what? You know what, it did teach me that. I could have had Marlon out of there in the first, and it's teach me that don't let people off the hook because that cost me a semi-final. Even though I lost, I could have still been in the semis with 1-6 points win and a loss. So, you know, this is a different entity, isn't it? Like, you got to fight for points. But that being said, with a 70% new roster this year, let's see how all these guys are coping September time and you're on your third weight cut. You know, you got bumps and bruises from the other two fights. Let's see where everyone's at then.
Did the time off suit you well? Because you have had a busy schedule the last few years.
That time off was the most well-needed thing I ever needed in my career. Like, imagine I did 3 seasons back-to-back, and then all of a sudden you just get a couple of months off. I'm like, wow, what's this? I enjoyed my life. I traveled the world a bit, ticked a few things off my bucket list. And I came back to my bread and butter. And here we are. I mean, I started training for this fight Christmas Day. I started on Christmas Day on purpose because I was like, you know what? I promised my mum that I was going to spend Christmas with her this year. So I flew back to England, spent Christmas Day morning, and had the Christmas dinner. There was a flight at 8:40 that night. And I was like, I'm leaving. Sorry, mum. I've got goals to chase. I said, oh, she's like, off you go, son. So left her and got to Thailand and started chasing the dream again.
Wow. Wait, let me follow up real quick. I think Goz was going to ask something, but you left on Christmas Day, like on the spur, or this was pre-planned?
Kind of a bit of both, because I wanted to be a man of my word and promised my mum that I'd spend Christmas with her. So I did, technically. And then I left that night. I found a flight out of there to get back on this journey.
That's fair. Okay, you see, you had some turkey, opened some gifts, and then a hug and a kiss, and you bounced. You didn't leave after breakfast or nothing.
Exactly.
Brendan, right, you mentioned the bucket list. Can we ask what were some of those things you checked off?
Oh, yeah. Of course you can. I always wanted to go Bali. So I went to Bali, spent 9 days there. I went to Glastonbury. That was a big one that I always wanted to check off. Wanted to do, like, skydive. But I'd already done that previously. What else was on there? I wanted to do Route 66, and I did that one. I wanted to buy a new property for an investment. Did that one. I ticked off a lot of things, and I ticked off a lot of personal things because I've been away a lot. So it's been 10 months since my last fight. I've taken care of a lot of stuff, and now I just feel ready and free again.
Nice. And so one question that I did want to ask you was, after doing this so many times, what would you say is the lesson in that first fight, the strategy? Is there something to that first fight? Are you more aggressive? Do you hold back? Like, how do you approach the first fight?
I'll be honest, like I say, this is my fourth season, but if I said there was a strategy, it's still a fight at the end of the day. They're still going to lock the door and say fight. So you can go in as much thought process as you want that I'm going to do this and that, but if the other guy's not reading the script, then you're in for a hell of a fight. So I know Pedro's a game guy. So, I mean, we'll see what happens from the 19th.
Would you say win, lose, or draw, could this possibly be the last time you do the tournament, the season?
I say every year is my last year. Somehow I end up back here. There's an old saying, and this is the reason that I did a tournament, is because you should find the hardest thing you can possibly do in life and go for that, because it'll get your purpose, get you out of bed every morning, keep you hungry, keep you focused. This is the hardest thing I can physically do right now. So why not chase after this? Give me another year of purpose, another year focus, and chasing the dream.
Did you read that somewhere? Did someone tell you that? I like that quote, or that, you know, mantra or whatever.
I don't know. I've heard that somewhere, and it's resonated with me.
And yeah, I like it.
And it's really true. Find the hardest thing, something that scares the life out of you. It's ambitious. It gets you out of bed every morning with a fire up your ass. And that's exactly what this does for a year.
Wow. You know, you mentioned skydiving. I've always wanted to do it. And I'm wondering if, you know, I'm kind of pussing out with my excuses. Oh, I'm over 50 years old and this and that. But I'm going to think about what you said a little bit. I've always wanted to do it one time. Maybe I'll apply that.
I'm just thinking, I've actually got an interesting story for you with the skydive. So it was on my bucket list for a long time. And then a friend of mine came to Dubai, and he stayed with me. Or he stayed in Dubai with a couple of my friends. They were on vacation. And I came in to see him on like a Wednesday afternoon. And they'd booked a skydive, and one of them wasn't feeling too good. So he was like, do you want to take my spot? It's like a Wednesday, I've just finished training. I'm like, okay, let's do it. So I just randomly did it on a Wednesday afternoon, like not even thinking about it. Would I do it again? Probably not. Did I enjoy it? Yeah, probably. It was. It just feels like so much can go wrong. It really does. It's insane.
Give me why the probably not. I'm curious about this. Or did you just answer that a lot can go wrong?
It's just, you know what it is? It's one of them things that you have to feel once. But once you felt it, what are you gaining out of the second time? Does that make sense?
A little bit, yeah. Was it, you know, was it a little bit of a rush? Anything close to MMA, a fight in MMA?
You know, I'll tell you what, right? When you get in the plane and on the way to the plane, everybody's all yap, yap, yap. But when the plane's like this, it goes very quiet in there. And then when you actually get to the top and the door opens, shh, and you just hear this noise, you're like, oh my God. Next thing, you're out the door. And it's like when the ref says, are you ready? Are you ready? Let's go. Similar type of rush.
When are you most nervous? In the locker room when they're taping you up? In the walkout? When you're waiting for your opponent? Or maybe you're the second one in? When do the nerves hit you most before the fight starts?
I think it's when they knock on your door and say, Brendan, you're up next. I'm like,
oof.
I'm like, again? We're doing this again, Brent? Yeah. Okay. There we go.
And it has nothing to do with the opponent. It's just the competition? Or is it sometimes the opponent, like they have an interesting skill that you know that might trouble you, or what is it?
No, it could be anyone. You could be fighting your next door neighbor. You could be fighting an Uber driver. You could be fighting a world champion. When they knock on that door and say you're up next, I don't care who you are, the belly drops.
What's scarier, and that knock on the door, an MMA fight, or you're just walking through Liverpool, Manchester late at night and someone brandishes a knife and says, let's go? What's scarier to you?
Same. It's all the same. It's like, it's fight or flight, right? It's like, right, okay, this is what I've got to deal with right now. Like, but again, I'll go back to my original point. Find the hardest thing you can possibly do in life and go for that. This is the hardest thing for me mentally and physically, spiritually, emotionally, the hardest thing that I can do. So when they said, you want to do it again? I was like, absolutely not. And then I was like, sat and thought about it. I'm like, okay, you've been a champion. You know, you're going to have 4 fights in 7 months. You're getting a bit older now. So why not just rack up as many fights as you can? Show everyone your skills. Paint a few more canvases like the artist that I am. So let's see.
Hey, Brendan, so you brought up earlier in the interview how you like that there's new blood, right, coming in from Bellator and all that. In doing your homework on Pedro, have you seen anything that you maybe haven't encountered in some of the guys that have been in the seasons previous?
You just lost you for 1 second. Repeat the last bit of the question. In doing your homework?
In doing your homework, did you see anything with Pedro Carvalho that was different from some of the competitors that you've seen before in the season?
Not really, no. Pedro's a world-class level fighter. He comes from a great gym, John Cabner's, one of the best coaches in the world. They're going to have a solid game plan. John knows me very well, so I know they're going to come prepared. I'm prepared. And we'll have a beer after the fight. It's just another one of them nights at the office.
Do you already know who's going to be in the finals, you versus?
One thing I've learned about that gentleman is never look past the night. So let's get rid of Pedro and then we'll have this chat.
Goes, don't you agree that if people were in Chicago listening to this guy on a morning show or an afternoon drive show, it would pique their interest and want to say, I want to watch him fight. Where do I get tickets? Things like that. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. That skydiving story was interesting. The motivational stuff he's been dropping. PFL, get it together, man. Listen to your boy. I've been covering this sport for 17 years. When you got a gem, you build around the gem. Anyway, couple last questions, Brendan. What's your I know you guys are all, you know, you work for Team Brendan Loughnane, but this Bellator PFL thing, we've been wondering, will it run about a year where you guys will kind of keep score, the PFL guys, when they beat the Bellator guys? Does that even affect you at all? Do you think about that?
No, I don't think about that at all. I'm just glad that there's some fresh faces in here, some big names and some fresh competition. That's all I care about right now. Like the fact that they used to come from Bellator, like the fact that, you know, Shaman and Tyler Diamond and Mother, they, like some of them have all come from the UFC, but I don't start saying, oh, I beat 3 UFC guys. You know, it is what it is. They're now in the PFL. They're in my home. So let's see.
Do you hope Caleb beats Holly this weekend?
That was a random one. You fired that one out of nowhere, didn't you? Wow, I can't believe she made 135. Fair play to Kayla. That must have took a lot of hard work and dedication.
Holly's a little older now. Some people maybe might think either less of you or whatever because you're not there, but you know deep down in your heart, you've beaten competition, you know, in different spots. So I always wonder that if there's ever a chip on your shoulder because of that.
That's a good question. I've sparred numerous UFC champions, though. Peter Yan, Aljamain Sterling, Conor McGregor. Like, I've sparred all of the champions, like the major champions, and like I know where I'm at. They know where I'm at. And all that really matters to me out of this game is the respect that I get off my peers, not the respect that I get off some egg on Twitter. So it's true, though. Like, yeah. If I get a message off a fighter that I really respect, like, oh, keep going, or well done, or that means more to me than 1,000 egg messages on Twitter. So I don't really concern myself with that. And I make really good money in the PFL, and it's on the same channel as the UFC. I know it's not as big, but, you know, PFL are doing the thing now. I'm really coming up.
Yeah, for sure. Like I say, you guys will be on ESPN that night. That's cool, man. Brendan, thank you so much, as always, for the time and skydiving story. Great one. Hope the next week goes for you well for you with your weight cut. That's always the first test, right? The first fight. And then, of course, go out there and have fun, man, like you always do.
Thanks, fellas. Have a good night. Take care. Peace.
You too. Cheers.
Thank you.
All right, folks. So, again, that was a pre-record with Brendan Lochnane. So, what do you think? When Kayla won, was he cheering? All right, go PFL.
I think so. Yeah.
A little bit, right? I think he's always going to have a chip on his shoulder because the UFC shunned him a little bit. And I think they fucked up when they did, but I think that's the way he feels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree with that. But he's in good spirits, and he's actually one of my favorite fighters to talk to, and he's a great fighter to watch. He's a gem. You know, PFL needs to do everything they can to kind of keep him around, build around him, because he, you know, that's something else, man, to have that mindset and that determination to always want to improve. Being in seasons are difficult, man. He's done quite a few.
Yeah. The main event of Magomed Umolatov, who's 14-0, 32 years of age, versus Andrei Korshkov, a former Bellator welterweight champion. I mean, look, I think the fight will be okay. Korshkov's been around, but he's only 33. But I don't know. I just, like I say, I think the PFL, they went through this with WSOF and early PFL, and they had a lot of stars that just couldn't connect with the fans.
Mm-hmm.
And now that they have a fighter, a star that can connect with the fans, I just would have thought he would be the guy to put on the main card. Because remember, it's not just because he can connect with the fans. His fights are really, really fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Alex Pereira dispatched of Jamal Hill pretty quickly. I had basically said that the air was taken out of the T-Mobile Arena after Holloway and Gaethje. So we had Zhongwei Li, who defeated Yan. We'll get to that in just a second. That was the co-main, and then the main was Pereira versus Hill. Pereira went out there and won. And, dude, his chin didn't even come into play. He never got hit.
No, Jamal Hill was landing some good leg kicks. It looks like he was trying to set things up, but you could just see it. He was kind of having problems finding the distance, where Alex Pereira did find that distance, and it looked like he knew it was just a matter of time. And he got him good, man, with that left hand right on the button and then the follow-up, and that was a wrap. But now if you look at what Alex Pereira has done, the fighters he's defeated, dude, you got yourself a little megastar, you know. At the press conference, Jamal Hill is an American. He was getting booed, and the Brazilian was getting cheered. You know, like, the fans love this guy.
Yep, and he doesn't speak much more than a lick of English as well.
Mm-hmm.
But he connects. You know, he does that whole warrior thing. His fights, they he has an excellent walkout. His fights always deliver, win or lose. the nice thing was he got put over by Izzy. When you can go out there and beat the incumbent, especially a longtime reigning champion, I think that ups your stock.
Mm-hmm.
And he did that. And he fights frequently too. You know, I kept saying this guy's been fighting a lot. It's going to catch up to him. And that chin's been tested a lot. But yeah, Jamal just couldn't get to it. He's big, man. He's 6'6", got a big frame. And so then Jamal kicks him and it sounded like it hit his cup. And the ref, Herb Dean, kind of wants to step in and he's like, nope. Tells him, you wait right there. I'm all right. Let's keep going. Half a second later, boom, a vicious uppercut slash left hook lands. I mean, you could see Jamal's eyes right then and there. He was already out. Of course, he lands. And then, of course, now he's on instinct. And Alex Fajeda jumps into his guard, pummels him, really puts him out. Jamal was having trouble accepting it. I'm sure he finally looked up and said, oh, okay, I get it. And then that little deal he did where he stuck his hands out like he was. I heard that in the post-fight press conference, he explained that. It was hilarious, that whole sequence, you know, from the groin shot to telling Herb to back off, the knockout, and then doing that little celebration. Holy cow, man. This guy's amazing. Now, that said, dude, it's only his first title defense. He didn't defend the middleweight, but he now just defended the light heavyweight. And he says he wants to fight at 301, which is 3 weeks away. Problem is, he doesn't want to fight a light heavyweight. He just wants to be on the card, so he's willing to fight a heavyweight. What do you think of that?
There's no upside to it, in my opinion. Of course, it would be massive for the card. It'd be great. He's a superstar. But why risk it? Why risk it against the heavyweight? It's too risky for me. I would keep him out of that equation. I'm not saying he can't do it. Trust me. I actually do believe he could go in there and, depending on the heavyweight, he could have a good night, but too risky for me. I wouldn't do that.
Well, like, you don't want to put him in against Jailton Almeida because that guy will just take you down and smash you.
Right.
Right? And Curtis Blades or something. So guys like that you don't want to mess with. But I'm thinking like a Tai Tuivasa, a Marcos Rogerio de Lima, just someone that just wants to stand. Jarzinho Rosenstruck. Yeah. Maybe a heavyweight that you're catching out of shape because it's only 3 weeks away. Who knows, man? Maybe you might catapult this guy even into superstardom, and he helps sell the Brazil thing. Because imagine, he's probably pretty big in Brazil right now, too, dude.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if the UFC is even going to consider it.
Jeez, I don't know. I wouldn't do it. It would really have to be one of those just quick scenarios, you know, where one of those guys does put their hand up and say, I want some. But really, like, what's other than just helping out a card, what is the upside?
That's it. Yeah, just helping out the card. Because right now it's headlined by Alexander Pantoja versus Steve Ursig. Like, that's not sexy. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, and I think they've been to Brazil a few times, and they haven't done what they used to do. You know, when they had Nogueira and Silva and Shogun, Vanderlei. Like, they haven't had that Aldo, Maia. And it needs that, I think. I'm still wondering why they don't have a UFC PI in Brazil, by the way. I know they're setting one up in Mexico, but, geez, Brazil's been such a hotbed. You would have thought they, like, I haven't even heard them mention that.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, look, you could take Diego Lopez, right? He just had a great, great fight. He shouldn't be too banged up. Maybe you match him up with someone and just pad that card a little bit more, but it just seems too risky for me. What if he breaks his hand? What if he gets knocked out?
Yeah, well, the KO would be the worst thing for sure. I mean, it wouldn't hurt his championship status, right? But, yeah, he could get viciously hurt. Who knows? Like I say, the UFC, you just never know. I don't think they think of that too often. They think of the then and now. And right now it's April 14th. This thing takes place on May 4th, if I'm not mistaken. Is it May 4th or May 5th? It is a Saturday in May, and it's May 4th. So we're literally sitting on, holy shit, almost less than 3 weeks away.
Mm-hmm. right around the corner.
Yeah, it's probably not worth the risk at this point. Unless there's just these metrics that are off the charts in Brazil on Alex Fajeda, and they've only sold out half of the arena. Who knows? The UFC is a multi-billion-dollar business. If they have to take an L at an arena, I think they just should, but you preserve your assets, right?
Mm-hmm. That's very important.
Yeah. In the co-main event, Zhang Weili defeated Jonan Yan. And, but that was a bizarre fight because Weili looked like she finished her twice. Once she choked her out, and twice she battered her with unanswered strikes. The fight continued, and then Jonan Yan must have knocked down Weili like two or three times. And every single time we thought, oh man, this one's coming back. The other one gassed her arms out, or she maybe had an adrenaline dump. But no, man, Weili would not go away. I tipped my hat. And neither would Yan. So in the end, we had ourselves a pretty decent fight. It sucks because we're kind of judging it on a curve because we were all so exhausted from Holloway and Gaethje that maybe we didn't put into it like the analysis at the time, you know, the excitement of a title fight. But the ladies did all they could, right, with the hand they were dealt.
Yeah, I felt like we were watching three different fights there because there was the submission, right, that could have ended the fight easily at the end of round one. Then there was just an absolute battering where you thought at any second the referee could stop this. And then there's the actual ending to the fight. But overall, I really enjoyed that fight. Yan Jonan kind of showed us that you can never really count her out. In a way, I don't think her stock drops too much. And she kind of leaves the door open for maybe down the road. If we think she's continuing to improve, I'd be okay with seeing a rematch there. But yeah, it did just kind of see like there might have been a little crack in the armor there for Zhang Weili at times. You know, I know she got put down at least three times. It might have even been more. But the cardio, for as much as they were saying, it was starting to slow down, and I think it slowed down just a little. She made it. She looked fine at the end. That really sets up Tatiana Suarez, right? You want to see that fight. You want to see how well she would do in that situation. This fight helped kind of sell that fight for me.
Yeah, and you're right. I think Jonan Yan can come back. When she lost to Esparza and Rodriguez back-to-back, she then came back and beat Dern and Andrade. So she's been getting, like, killer after killer, you know? Mm-hmm. And now she knows she can go the distance with Weili. She's put her on her can. Yeah, she almost got finished, but I think she can maybe possibly build off that. I heard in China it was trending. It was a big deal, which is probably good for business for the UFC. But, you know, again, we're North Americans. We're Americans. We usually talk about what's popping over here on this end of the world. And that fight was just it wasn't people weren't really too excited about it. Mm-hmm. They went out and performed, and that's cool. But I don't see them as stars yet. Other than I'm sure there's metrics that prove Weili is, you know, in China maybe, but like I don't think Venom is filling orders for American fans or, you know, North American fans or European fans for, you know, Weili gear or anything like that.
Right.
Yeah, without burying the ladies, I mean, I'll just kind of leave it at that. Here's how the rest of the card unfolded. So we've already talked about Pajeda's win over Hill, Weili's win over Yan, Holloway's win over Gaethje. Sarukian defeated Charles Oliveira via split decision, but he didn't get a title shot because, again, Poirier will fight Makhachev at UFC 302 in Newark, New Jersey on June 1st. That's when they'll unveil, by the way, the new gloves that the UFC has produced that are going to protect their hands better and reduce eye pokes. Bo Nickel beat Cody Brundage, and I don't know many people talking about that one. Even Bo Nickel wasn't too happy with his own performance. The fans booed a little. It was a letdown. They got that one wrong. I'm not saying the card wasn't a 10 or anything like that. I just think they got that one wrong, and that's fine. So, and I don't think Nickel looks like a future champion just yet. You know, like he's good. I'm not saying he's not good, but I just think we need to tap the brakes and let him keep developing and getting better.
You know what it reminded me of? And this isn't a shot at this person. or this organization, but you know when the PFL would just put Biagio, Ali Walsh, an amateur fight, like on the main card? That's kind of how it felt. Like all of a sudden you just took a break. It wasn't as high level as everything else we were seeing. And it was just kind of odd. To Bo Nickel's credit, he doesn't really puff his chest out though. Like, you know, why you booing me or this and that. Like if anything, he was saying, you know, I'm going to win you guys over, but it just was, just felt out of place.
It did. Yeah. Whoever idea that was just needs to go, all right, yeah, fucked up. That's it, you know? Mm-hmm. Kayla Harrison defeated Holly Holm. I mean, up there, dude. And I think they have themselves a star there. Question is, does she go straight to Raquel Pennington or not? So what do you think of the fight? What do you think is next for her?
I thought she probably couldn't have looked any better. I mean, she improved once again, which is very important in the situation that she's in. But everything in from the press conference to making weight, she soaked everything in. She was great on the mic. Her performance was, she was just an absolute bull. She wouldn't stop coming forward. And once she got a hold, there's times in the PFL where Kayla Harrison would get a hold of you. And it wasn't like a lock that she was going to throw you, you know, like against Aspen Ladd or Larissa Pacheco. But here it's like, once she got it, she committed, boom, there goes Holly Holm flying, right? Almost like Carl Parisian out there throwing people. And she made the best of every situation. Like that couldn't have been any better. Could she skip the line? I mean, look, when you look at these people that the UFC pay top dollar for, that they invest in, yeah, I think they can. They have that ability. I don't want to be the one to lob the phone call over to Juliana Pena, that's for sure. But could she? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Should she? No, I don't think so.
Yeah, it's interesting when, I mean, Gilbert Melendez walked straight into a title shot. I don't think that's ever been done before. And Eddie Alvarez lost to Cowboy Cerrone. Chandler got a title shot because he beat Hooker.
Mm-hmm.
Ben Askren beat Lawler but didn't get a title shot. But he might have had he beaten Masvidal. So I don't know. I don't know what the right play is here. If I'm the UFC, and I think Pennington is a Dana White favorite, I don't know. I think I go with Harrison versus Pennington. I understand Pennington's side of it because she's kind of had to take the long road every single time. But again, the long road, it doesn't mean it's a Bible or it's a constitution. The UFC just kind of goes with the flow. So she might have to just accept it. I think Kayla ticked all the boxes. Yeah, Prochazka and Rakic was a hell of a fight. And I know that Prochazka didn't get a fight of the night, but he did get a performance. So that was kind of cool. But I felt like Rakic put up more of a fight than Gaethje.
Yeah.
But either way, that was one of my favorite fights of the night.
That was fun. And that's what the card was needing at that time. It needed a little bit of a back and forth battle because, you know, how can you hate some of these fighters? They went out, they did their job, but the fights were like a little one-sided, right? This was, I think, the first one where we felt there was a little bit of back and forth, and it was tremendous. It sucks for Rakic because he had moments in the fight where he looked good. He was doing the right stuff, but he got caught. And the way those two savages throw, man, I mean, there's just so much behind every punch. But I'm glad at least one of them got a bonus. But I get it, man. Gaethje and Holloway was something else. But you're right, it was one-sided.
Yeah. Congrats to Prochazka. I thought he was going to lose. But his chaos, his controlled chaos came through this time against Alexander Rakic, who had some really, really good moments, man. But after almost 2 years gone, he takes an L. Aljamain Sterling, he kind of sucked the life out of the prelims on ESPN. So here's what happened. Diego Lopez, he smashed Sadiq Youssef. Kayla Harrison smashes Holly Holm. And Yuri Prochazka beats Alexander Rakic in a really exciting fight. The one fight out of that foursome, though, which is the feature prelims, Was Aljamain Sterling's debut at 45? Look, was he dominant? Yeah, he won 30-27 against the ranked opponent in Calvin Kattar. Was it exciting? No.
Okay, but if you're the matchmaker, you can foresee that coming, right? Like, especially when you have a guy that's going up in weight, probably not going to be the most riskiest guy, right, when he's fighting there. I don't know. If I was in that boardroom, I'd say, are you guys sure? Like, these are two really good names, but we kind of know what one of them is going to do. We have the potential here for this type of fight. They can't be shocked about it either. But, boy, does the UFC like to express how they feel with certain moves. And if you notice, poor Aljamain just kind of walking around with his head down. No interview for him. I can't think of anybody else that night that didn't get an interview.
Mm-hmm. They were pressed on the clock. I don't want to make excuses for the UFC, but I'm sure the decision had something to do with the fans were booing. The fans were just going to boo him more. Maybe they saved him. I don't know. What I would do if I'm the UFC is put Movsar Evloev against Sterling and just say, you guys grapple fuck for 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. The winner will continue to push, you know, and see, and the loser will just kind of take a hit. But literally, both guys are starting to climb featherweight, and Movsar is already up there. And, you know, the fans haven't taken to you guys. So I think we're going to have to pitch you guys against each other. Be on the lookout for a matchup like that. I'm telling you.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. Why not?
The other fights were Renato Moicano defeats Jalen Turner. Turner knocks down Moicano, tries to walk it off like he just hit a home run in the playoffs. Instead, Moicano's still alive. Ref keeps it going. Then he comes back and finishes Jalen Turner. Jessica Andrade defeats Marina Rodriguez. Split decision win there. Bobby Green defeats Jim Miller. Jim fucking Miller. 30-27, 30-25, 29-26. It really wasn't close. His eye was messed up. Poor Miller. I had a feeling he could lose. I didn't think he'd get worked like that. And then Davison Figueiredo started the night off against Cody Garbrandt with a sub. Garbrandt looked all right. I thought he won round one, but he got finished. So congrats to Figgy on that one.
Bobby Green can be so tough when he just sticks to his game plan and does his thing. That was an awesome performance for him on a big, big card. Sucks for Jim Miller because the story behind it, you know, is such a cool one. 100, 200, 300. But that was an absolute battering he took.
Mm-hmm. And so the bonuses were Holloway and Gaethje for fight of the night, Holloway and Prochazka for performance of the night. So 600 grand goes in Max Holloway's pocket. Gaethje gets 300 grand, Prochazka 300 grand. Dana White said he would take care of the other ones, and he sounded like he was talking about the other finishers. Because he said Lopez, Harrison, excuse me, and a few of the others, but it looked like he was pointing out the ones that finished. He didn't say Sterling.
Right.
Sounds like I'm piling on the poor guy. One last thing here, and then we'll get out. UFC 117 main event, Anderson Silva versus Chael Sonnen. That fight is going into the Hall of Fame for the fight wing. This is a fight that was, look, if you throw out Chael testing positive weeks, you know, and us finding out weeks afterwards, if you throw that out the window, it was a classic. Anderson was the champ. He had an injury going in. He fought through it, and then he catches Chael after being down 4-0. One of the best comebacks ever. But like I say, had Chael won, he would have tested positive, and the whole, you know, would have been overruled. It would have all been for naught. But yes, the fight was legit at the time. What did you think of that decision?
I'm still baffled by it, to be honest. I mean, look, if you're going to ask me, was it a great fight? Yeah, it was a great fight. Well, it had a great ending to it. You know, I wouldn't say that it was a great fight because it was somewhat one-sided. But how did we get to that? That's my question, is the way we got to that was one guy had to cheat to get to that. So why are we highlighting that? I don't understand. I mean, I could see if maybe we were short on fights or something, but it just seems a little odd to me. I don't get that one. I don't have too much of a problem for it as far as what it actually did, everything that went into it, the fight itself. But if we see what surrounded that, I felt like that probably disqualifies it.
Yeah, there's no shortage of fights. And it, and like I say, it would have caused the fights like that. Well, no, I should say fighters that tested a lot or tested positive and had fights overturned or, you know, suspensions, things like that, including Anderson. Anderson did it one time too. His fight versus Nick Diaz, I think they both got popped. And that's why they went the route of USADA, you know, and kind of cleaned things up. But for a while there, it was just kind of like, what are we doing here? And I never fault the guys that had the TRT exemptions. I thought they found ways around the rules. And, you know, like I think Dan Henderson was one of the first to actually get that TRT exemption. And then, of course, guys started pushing the limits on the TRT exemptions. But if you were under the limits, you were okay, right? But yeah, in this instance, when he had other substances in him, and it the fight wound up being a no contest, if I'm not mistaken. So it just kind of didn't matter. Well, maybe it wasn't a no contest because Anderson won. I think it would have been a no contest had he lost.
Right.
So, you know, I personally don't think I would have done that. I like Silva and Sonnen. I think they're legendary figures in our sport. And if they're looking for ways to include Sonnen, because Silva's already there, I just think there could probably be other ways. I think Sonnen's already accepted, hey, look, I never won a major title. And I think he's got screwed, by the way, in that Paulo Filho fight. He should have claimed that WEC belt. And he's been so open and even laughed at himself at the fact that, hey, I was pretty loaded up with steroids. He's been quite open about it and joked about it. So this isn't like us kicking him while he's down or anything, but it just seems like this wasn't the fight really to do this for. It was a classic in the comeback, but yeah, it was just kind of tainted
a little bit. Yeah,
I'm looking at the salaries. Silva got 200 grand with no win bonus, and Sonnen got 35 grand for that night. And of course, maybe they got locker room bonuses, but that was the pay that night. Can you believe that shit?
Crazy.
So both of them combined didn't even make as much as Jiří Procházka did, or even Justin Gaethje in the losing effort.
Mm-hmm.
Just off his own bonus. We're not even talking about his show money.
Yeah.
It's great that the sport moved on, you know, but yeah. Little bit down memory lane. Fitch beat Alves that night. Guida beat RDA. Broke his jaw that night, I think. Matt Hughes beat Ricardo Almeida. Junior Dos Santos beat Roy Nelson. Rick Story beats Dustin Hazlett. Phil Davis beats Rodney Wallace. Johnny Hendricks was on the undercard. He was a future champion. He beats Charlie Brenneman. Tim Boetsch defeats Todd Brown. Stefan Struve defeats Christian Moorcraft. I hadn't heard that name in a while. Dennis Hallman defeats Ben Saunders. Anyway, all right, folks. Well, listen, that's our recap of UFC 300. It's in the books, historical fight card, probably the best fight card ever put together on paper. One of the best endings, if not the best ending ever. That's up for debate. It's up there, right? I think DJ finished with 1 second left, and so did Yair. But I don't know if it's the greatest KO ever. It was a great KO moment for sure. But
Edward was on with something else.
If you want to split hairs, it wasn't for an undisputed title. And I've seen this happen for the undisputed title. And like Anderson against Vitor was pretty spectacular, bro. Mm-hmm. And Edward's comeback against Usman.
Amazing.
Was pretty spectacular. Yeah. And Holly Holm over Ronda Rousey. Like, those are, I just feel like they're a little bit more, you know. But anyway, yeah. Enjoy. Well, there's really, I hope you enjoyed UFC 300. And we'll be talking to you guys later on the week. Don't forget tomorrow, a 90 minute spinning back click. And if you don't catch it live, it's always on YouTube. You can catch it then. Hopefully you become a fan of that show. It's usually a Monday morning or afternoon, depending on your time zone. It's noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, but it's live. And I think you guys would really, really enjoy it. So check it out. Subscribe to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/MMA Junkie Video. But yeah, tomorrow's 90 minutes. If you don't listen to this in time, you can always go back and just watch it on replay. All right, we're out of here. Go out and be a champion. Talk to you soon.